Hi, I'm Dr. Hillary McBride. Normally, therapy sessions are totally confidential, but in other people's problems, I open the doors to let you hear sessions with my long-standing clients. This is what people sound like when they talk with someone they trust about healing addiction, parenting stress, racist ideologies in the family, and other topics that feel so timely as we come through this difficult time. Other People's Problems, available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Heart. On this holiday weekend, we're rebroadcasting a show from July 2021. It's about a healthcare hero of the pandemic who we found inspiring and who may just inspire you. Later on, we'll have an update with Ian you won't want to miss. This week, we have another unsung healthcare hero of the pandemic. His name is Ian White.
So your mom is going to join us separately?
Yes, she should be. She's just trying to find her voice memos app on her phone.
Ian has made a difference that his coworkers probably didn't see coming.
And you have voice memo?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Trying to make sure I have enough space so it doesn't cut it off halfway through or anything.
So you've saved a lot of videos and photos on your phone.
Yes.
His mother, Nicole, has arrived on the Zoom call. She knows well from experience that Ian likes to step in when she needs help recording her end of the conversation.
Oh, Nicole?
Yeah, I'm here, but I just can't find the voice memo app on my phone.
Give me one second. I'll come help you, Mom.
Okay.
Oh, okay. He's going to help me. I'm downstairs. He's downstairs. Oh. Okay, well, here's Ian. He's going to get this. He's my phone wizard.
Turns out Ian is also a whiz at caring for seniors.
Hi, my name's Ian White. I work at Extendicare Kingston as a dietary aide, and I'm 19 years old.
Hi, my name is Nicole Casera. I'm Ian's mom, and I also live in Kingston, and I nominated him as a healthcare hero.
In her email to us, Nicole described Ian as a mature 19-year-old. He's been that way for a while. When he was 17, he was looking for work when a family friend said they were looking for help in the kitchen at Extendicare. That's a long-term care home in Kingston. He's been on staff there ever since. Ian is a hero because he's taken his work far beyond the job description.
Nicole Casera and Ian White, welcome to White Coat Black Art.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Nicole, why is your son a healthcare hero?
Well, my son works at Extendicare Kingston, and he works as a dietary aide, which is just really a glorified way of saying a waiter or a server. But he is my healthcare hero because he enjoys his job so much, and it's become clear during the pandemic that his friendship with the clients he serves has been not only a source of something positive during the pandemic for him, but also for them, especially during the lockdown when they could have no visitors. So the only people they saw all day were the people who worked there. So to have a positive interaction during each of your three meals and your snacks is that's a pretty important part of your day when you're not really seeing or talking to anybody else.
So Ian, tell me about a typical day as a dietary aide in long-term care.
So for a typical day, I'd get there at about like 6 a.m. and set up doing dishes and get everything ready for breakfast. And then by about 8 o'clock, I'd be serving breakfast. So I go around and I pour bowls of cereal and put jam on toast and run plates around and pour coffee and tea. So I kind of get a good chance, like first thing in the morning, to have a good personal talk with all of my residents and kind of see how their day is going so far. And if I know they're having a bad morning, maybe I can get them a cup of coffee or something like that to help. And then do all the dishes after breakfast and repeat again for lunchtime. That's about my day.
Nicole, you know, most moms I know are pretty proud of their son. So how do you know that he's a healthcare hero?
Well, I know because he comes home and talks to us. Like, we try to have at least one meal a day together, and often that ends up being dinner. Sometimes it's breakfast. He has a 6:15 shift, so sometimes, like, one of us gets up at 4:45 with them and sits with him while he's eating really early.
You're a hero, then.
Mostly my husband's a hero that way, because mostly he's the one that does that shift. But he tells us stories. Like, he cares about these people, and they're just wonderful stories about the things he's learned from the lives that they have lived or are living while they're there. Or he tells us funny stories. And I also think when you're 19 years old and all of a sudden your life comes to a screeching halt because there's a pandemic and you can't see people anymore, you can't see your friends. He didn't even see his girlfriend for a bit. And then you know that you work with vulnerable clients, which puts even more pressure on you to embrace that, to deal with that positively and not see it as a pain. I think that makes him a hero. I've watched him grow, and it's been pretty neat because a lot of it's been pretty unpredictable.
Nicole, any stories stand out that stuck in your mind?
I connected a lot with the fact that he has befriended this gentleman, has told him all sorts of stories, and then Ian comes home and tells me, and I'm a history teacher, so I can never know enough. There's always more to learn. There's always more stories to hear. And I love that he's able to get one-on-one interaction with someone who can share their experiences so that he can really learn. It's made the history less abstract, more concrete. The story he tells me about this gentleman who also happens to love chocolate. So sometimes I buy chocolate bars that Ian can pass on. So I connect with that.
Before we got Ian to tell that story, we made sure his manager asked the resident for permission. It turns out the man lived at Huronia Regional Center when he was a child. The Institution for Developmentally Disabled Children, which closed in 2009, was the subject of a class action lawsuit. That place has had a lasting impact on the man. Ian, you know, the first thing I think about, there are residents of long-term care that I've met who are Holocaust survivors, and they have flashbacks of being in the Holocaust. Is that the kind of thing that you heard from this man?
Yes, I know he does have sometimes like that, but unfortunately, with the state that he's kind of in at this point, he doesn't remember too much about what's going on unless he's kind of reading it off a piece of paper in front of him or he's kind of in the moment. So I find there has been a lot of residents who I've seen, Holocaust survivors and things like that, who have had trauma, and it has been a big impact on them even that far down in their life. But I find for him specifically, with his situation, it doesn't affect him too much that way.
But you said when he's in the moment, so it kind of comes in and out, doesn't it?
Yeah, he'll have more moments where he's a little bit more clear-headed if he's watching something on the news or in the middle of a conversation or something like that. But then there's other times where I notice he's looking in a mirror and reading off his paper like he's speaking with someone. It's just it's a hard situation because you don't really know what he knows and what he doesn't, and you don't want to ask him a question that's going to set something off.
Am I correct in assuming that he has some form of dementia?
Yes, I believe so, but it was due to his time in the schools. Actually, he received a lot of shock therapy treatments, so that has kind of made it so he doesn't really have too much short or long-term memory, unfortunately. I know there's like certain things he remembers really well, like he remembers his wife perfectly and his family and where he's from, but he doesn't so much remember like what he did the day before or like what he ate for lunch 5 minutes ago or anything like that.
What do you actually do for him? Like I can hear a lot of what you do for him, but what's your actual job with him?
So my actual job would just technically be bringing him his breakfast or his lunch and dinner, making sure he gets what he wants, cleaning up his plate, and kind of going on with the rest of my day. But for me, I find specifically with him, because he's one of my favorite residents who I get to see every day, when I get the chance, I like to go out of the way and sit and talk with him or read the paper that he's showing me or listen to the story he's telling me, because I know for him in that moment where he's remembering things, he needs to talk about it to help kind of him cope with it. So I find if I have the time where I can sit and listen, then it's going to help him, and also it'll help me because there's a lot I can learn from someone like that.
I imagine that you must be, especially during the pandemic, you must have been one of the only human beings who interacted with him in that way.
Pretty much, yeah, which is kind of sad because he does tend to kind of get in a loop with the things he says sometimes, where he doesn't remember that he's already talked about it or something like that. So I find a lot of people who have heard his stories like 10, 15 times are more likely to just kind of say, oh, okay, I can't really talk right now, and kind of keep going on their way. But I find he's really appreciative if you can just take a minute and listen to what he's saying. And then I find it helps him a lot, kind of get everything off his chest, which helps him kind of stay more positive on the whole as well.
Nicole, what's your reaction hearing Ian talk about that particular resident?
Well, I just think, first of all, it's just that simple act of kindness, taking time to listen. It can be very difficult, as you likely know from your work, when you're dealing with any patient that has a memory problem, whether it's from dementia or trauma or whatever, to just to patiently listen to something you've heard over and over again, you know, is not easy. And so it's one of the reasons why I think Ian's a healthcare hero, and other people that are in those kinds of roles that just take the time to be human, be kind, and to treat people as if they're people, you know. And when he goes in to do his job, he knows the job he's got to do. He's got the routine down, but he also understands that the most important part of that job is the people part of it.
Yeah.
It's not the serving of the food as much as the people. I mean, he knows what they like to drink or not drink. He doesn't even need sometimes to ask what they want.
I could tell you 160 people's coffee and tea orders and juice orders right off the top of my head.
Wow.
There's another couple in there that it's really sad. Ian was quite fond of both of them. They were a lovely couple, married, I think, over 60 years. And both of them have passed away, what, in the last 6 months, Ian?
Oh, dear.
Within the past 2-3 months, I would say.
Yeah. And that just, it just, they were just such a positive couple together. And that just really got me.
And Ian, you have brought all that home to your mom?
Yes.
You must have long conversations at the dinner table.
Well, I generally find at the end of the day, there's quite a bit to talk about because you never know what's going to happen. But I don't know. I find there's a lot of positive things that I have to talk about at the end of the day that I like to look back on.
We'll be right back.
I'm Elena Hudgens-Lyle.
And I'm Harvinder Vadva.
We're the hosts of Inappropriate Questions, and we're back with Season 3.
With some fantastic guests, we break down questions like...
Is asking where are you from appropriate small talk?
Is it okay to ask a coworker how much do you make?
Should you ask a polyamorous person, do you get jealous?
Inappropriate Questions Season 3. Available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat Black Art. This week, we're celebrating Ian White as an unsung hero of the pandemic. From age 17, Ian has worked as a dietary aide at Extendicare, a long-term care facility in Kingston. We know that a disproportionate number of long-term care residents died of COVID, especially during the first wave. They also faced loneliness and isolation thanks to lockdowns that barred family members and friends. One of the things that makes Ian a hero is how he stepped up to fill the gap by feeding meals to residents. Ian, you're feeding clients with dementia and you know, ALS and other serious chronic conditions. I remember my sister and I feeding our mother when she was in long-term care. It was a time to engage her mind by talking to her and when she couldn't speak, playing her favorite music, you know, which we played on a smartphone. How many clients do you feed on a shift?
Well, technically with my job, I don't have to feed any. That's up to the PSWs, but I find I go out of my way and I'll try to feed 2 or 3 a meal if I can, just because generally the PSWs are often running around full speed and have enough of their own work to do. And I like the time if I can sit for a couple minutes and help them eat breakfast or dinner. And like you said, it's a good time to kind of engage them in conversation and stuff like that. And a lot of them at meals seem to be more clear-headed with dementia and stuff like that, I've found. So when I'm sitting there and feeding them, it it kind of gives me a chance to connect with them more, even if it's only a few minutes of my day. But I think they know the fact that there's someone there who they don't know very well, who's still willing to sit and help them eat and basically, well, nourish them. I think it's really helpful for them and heartwarming for them to know that there are people who want to help and they're not being a burden because of what they have. They can't physically feed themselves.
When your long-term care home was in lockdown, that was a scary time.
Yes, for sure.
You took on more work. You did more shifts. So what motivated you?
Well, I think the fact that I knew when the pandemic started, everybody was pretty worried about going into work and everything like that. So we actually took a pretty large hit on our staff, and we were short-staffed a lot of the time. So I kind of decided to try to step up and pick up whatever extra shifts I could. And by doing that, I found that I got a lot closer with all of my residents because I saw them from, instead of like 20 hours a week, I would be seeing them 40 hours a week. So it was much more that way, but it was definitely scary for all of us because we knew that if we slipped up and weren't being smart about exposure or anything like that, it could have a very serious impact on kind of everyone in the home. So we all kind of stepped up and went extra out of our way to make sure we had no exposure that way.
Now, Ian, restaurant servers from time to time bear the brunt of unsatisfied customers. Do residents complain about the food to you?
Oh, yes. More than you would imagine. I've had quite a few plates thrown at me, tables, all types of cutlery, everything that way.
You had that woman who, she was yelling at you one time in another language. I'm not sure if that was about the food or not.
Yes, she
One threatened to fire him, like said that she'd give him one more chance and then she'd have to let him go.
Yeah, I did have, I did get threatened to get fired a couple of times.
You know, Ian, some people would react to plates being thrown in their general direction, you know, with an understandable fear response. So how do you react when that happens?
Well, you kind of just have to take it as it comes. For the most part, the people who are going to be doing anything like that, it's not their intention to be rude. They don't really know what's going on. So a lot of it for them, it's kind of like a fight or flight response. They don't know what's happening. So their first thing that they can do, since they can't get themselves out of the area, is to try to fight it. And I think for someone in my position, you just kind of have to take a step back and think, like, you can't take it personally, because a lot of the time they have nothing against you. They just are confused and don't know what's going on. And it makes everything much more difficult for them.
Ian, you're 19 years old, and I'm wondering where you get this wisdom from. Because when it comes to people with dementia, you've nailed it. That's exactly it. And you know, I can tell you there are times when I've taken it personally when a loved one with dementia has attacked me personally, mm-hmm. and I have to remember it's not them. It's the dementia,
yeah.
Or it's, you know, they're remembering mm-hmm. a time when they had conflict in their lives, and this gives them a sense of feeling centered for a moment. But so where does that wisdom come from with you?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think a lot of it comes with time. I've been there for about 2 years now, and I've noticed over the last year I've kind of come a long way with my understanding of all these illnesses and things that way. But I think also just another part comes from the way I was raised, with kind of trying to go the extra step to be kind and look out for people that way. And I think that's just kind of set me up for success, because it's second nature to me in this job. I don't have to think about it the same way. It's just something I want to do rather than feel like I have to do.
Nicole, where do you think he gets it from?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to follow that, because he was so kind saying it was how he was raised. But I mean, we have always tried to raise our kids to do that. And we volunteer and do different things in our community to help out people. And Ian's often been part of that in one way or another. So I think I think it comes from that. And he hasn't had a lot of experience with elderly people prior to this. So he's got some grandparents around, but thankfully they're in good health. So it's not from that prior experience, but you definitely have seen him learn this. He also has a very quick sense of humor. I have to say that his sense of humor, I think, has got him through some of those awkward times when someone does something that takes him by surprise or objects. He's often able to come back with a witty remark or to laugh it off. And I think that helps. And that he gets from his dad. I can't take any credit for his good sense of humor. That's just, his dad's got a very quick wit.
Yeah, you've got a pretty good sense of humor, too, I can tell. So, Ian, what are your plans for the fall?
So I'm actually going to school for the fall for recreational therapy. So I am hoping to kind of get into a field where I'm working in the same kind of environment, but rather than doing dishes, I would be working with the activities staff and like playing games and doing exercises and things like that with the residents rather than serving meals.
Nicole, you nominated Ian as a healthcare hero. What do you make of his career? Yeah. So what do you make of his career plans?
Well, I'm thrilled, and I think he's a natural fit. And I think it will work well. The thing that's wonderful about it is that he wasn't sure what he wanted to do, and he sort of found it. So the pandemic has brought a lot of grief and stress, but with it, there have been all sorts of little joys and blessings, I think. And I think that's something that lots of people have thought about as it's gone on, you know, to sort of help get through. And so I think one of the blessings has been the relationships he's been able to develop with these people and some money that he can save for school to take some pressure off there. But most importantly, finding what he wanted to do and realizing that, yeah, there's a career. I mean, he never would have known about this career had he not spent time in this place. And I don't know if he even would have known about it if he hadn't spent as much time as he did during the pandemic. And even where he works, the people he's talked to about it, like the woman that deals with that recreation therapist role has said she thought he'd be a good fit. So I think it's great. I mean, he's going to Niagara and in Welland, and that's a beautiful part of the country. So I'm looking forward to some road trips up to visit him.
And I hope you get to, Ian, I hope you get to do your studies in person.
Yeah, hopefully.
And just the last thing you said, Nicole, is a reminder that even during a pandemic, there are silver linings. And that's what this show is all about. So I just want to say, Nicole Cassera, thank you so much for nominating your son, Ian. And I want to thank Ian White for being a healthcare hero. And I want to thank both of you for speaking to me right now.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
It has been.
My conversation with Ian first aired in July 2021. Since then, Ian has started a 2-year recreation therapy program at Niagara College. Ian White, welcome back to White Coat Black Art.
Hello.
You have been in the recreation therapy program for a semester now. What sorts of things have you been learning?
So a lot of what we've been learning kind of right now is sort of the more practical side of it, like learning about different kind of areas we'll be working with, various kind of disabilities and things like that, as well as kind of like the theory behind it and what sort of makes a good rec therapy professional and stuff like that. And we've also been doing a little bit of like field work experience, so doing some volunteer work and things like that, just to kind of get used to explaining to people what the field is. And then for this next semester coming up, we're going to be doing some more hands-on rec therapy kind of work with placements.
And what sorts of placements will those be?
So we had a bunch of options to choose from. The one I kind of picked is like a big brothers, big sisters kind of thing. So I'll be working, hopefully, if I get that placement, I'll be working with kids grades 5 to 8 and doing some physical activity things with them and kind of teaching them about benefits of kind of a healthy lifestyle and being physically active and getting them in the mind state for recreation.
You know, there's wanting to get into a program and then there's the reality of getting into it. What are you liking about it so far?
I've liked everything about it so far. It's definitely been interesting with every class, and it's sort of like I had an idea of this is kind of what I wanted to do before I got into the program, and it's sort of just kind of reinstated that like even more. I've really been enjoying learning about different theories and everything, and sort of all the various benefits of being a participant in recreation. So it's been a little interesting for me kind of getting back into being a student. I've been out of being a student for a while, but when it's something you enjoy doing and is an interest to you, then it's not as much like work.
When you were on our show as one of our healthcare heroes, you talked about really being drawn to working with people with seniors who live in long-term care. Do you still see yourself doing that as you work your way through the recreation therapy program?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's sort of my main plan after graduation. Right now, we have a lot of different placement options in sort of various different recreation fields. So I'm kind of trying to take the opportunity that I have with my multiple different placements to sort of get an idea of maybe some other options as well, just so that I'm not only locked in on long-term care. Like, that's definitely what I'm leaning towards more, but I also want to get some experience in different fields just in case and see if there's anything that sort of calls to me, like working with kids or patients in addictions or something like that.
Do you still go back to the long-term care home where you worked previously?
Yes, I'm actually going to be going back to work a bit over the holidays. I'm looking forward to it. I've missed my my residents for sure. It's been weird not seeing them every day. So I'm looking forward to kind of going back and catching up with everyone.
Well, I bet they've missed you too. So this is going to be a happy reunion. Ian White, thank you so much for the update and best of the holiday season to you and your family.
Yes, you as well.
We'd love to check back with Ian after he becomes a recreation therapist. Next week, we'll be back with a very popular episode of our sister show, The Dose. The CBC's Dr. Peter Lin helps answer the question, how can I take charge of my health if I don't have a family doctor? This edition of White Coat Black Art was produced by Amina Zoffer with help from Rachel Sanders, digital producer Ruby Buiza, and Jeff Goods. Technical operations were by Gabby Hagariles. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. Happy holidays. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.